Talking Heads from the Chartered Institute of Internal Auditors.
Hello, I'm Liz Sandwith. I'm the Institute's Chief Professional Practice Advisor, and I would like to welcome you, Mike Taylor, as our current president to this podcast. I have a number of questions I would like to ask you, but first and foremost, may I say huge thank you for your time.
Well, thanks, Liz, for inviting me, and I'm obviously delighted to be here. I mean, our membership obviously are absolutely key to achieving all the things that we know internal auditors can achieve. Having this opportunity to talk with you in a fashion that may help those members progress both their functions and their personal careers delights me. So thank you.
Thank you, Mike. So you are our current president. Could you just give us a little bit of your background and your internal audit career history so that we can position your responses to questions within that framework?
Of course, yes. I started out as a chartered accountant, as many of our membership have done, but moved across into an audit role in 1991, so a long while ago, with a brief to turn around the audit function and make it of value, make it relevant to the particular organisation I was in, which was an insurance business. The role I was offered was for 2 years, and I could go back to doing whatever else I wanted to do. Suffice it to say, I never quite got out of internal audit after that. I loved it so much that I stayed put. And I've led a number of audit functions over that time, the insurance sector primarily, but also the banking sector, the service sector. And I've also run risk functions, compliance functions alongside that. So the value of an integrated and coordinated assurance response with audit, for me, right at the heart of that, is a key part of what I'm interested in. Latterly, I was head of audit for Experian, the global information services business, where I ran their operations worldwide from an internal audit point of view. And I retired from that last summer, which has allowed me an even stronger focus on the affairs of the Institute. So obviously I was deputy president last year, president this year, and relished the opportunity to help our members develop as really valuable internal auditors to their organisations.
Thank you for that. You talked about Experian and having a global footprint. Some of our members absolutely work with organisations that have a global footprint. What did you see as the challenges as head of internal audit with an organisation that had a presence in a variety of different countries with a raft of different rules and regulations?
Well, I think one of the key challenges for us is getting a consistency of audit delivery. So when you think about the value proposition of audit, most of the people we engage with, whether it's leaders of individual sections of a business or leaders of a country within a business, what they're looking for is a reliable perspective from audit, a set of insights that will help them deliver against their objectives, against their plans. And one of the challenges is when you're looking at audit from a global perspective, you often get divergence of execution and divergence of view. And certainly within the Experian context, but within Zurich before that, Zurich Insurance, the thing that constituted a very substantial part of the value delivery we could give the business was that global view aggregated against a consistent set of standards. So when we said, you know, this is a problem here, but it's not a problem there, the business knew that they could rely upon that. So that then, in terms of dealing with that as a head of audit, it brings you back to making sure that you've got a globally consistent set of standards, that your people are sticking to them, which brings you back to internal quality assurance and external quality assurance, and I'm sure we might come back and talk about that a little later. It comes back to making sure that the way that audit is executed in your enterprise is totally aligned with that enterprise's strategy and what they're trying to do. So there are a number of things really about driving consistency, driving an understanding of the way you want audit to operate. That comes back for me, came back for me to engagement with my audit team and ensuring I'd got really good means of communicating regularly with the members of my audit team. So they knew those expectations, they knew the standards we were going to work to, they knew what we'd found recently in any part of the enterprise and what therefore might be relevant to them. But of course, it also comes back to engagement with the stakeholders in the enterprise and ensuring they know what they can expect from audit and what audit's there to deliver. Because I think we know, and many of the folks listening into this podcast will know our strap line, that audit's a good thing and we should have more of it. We know it's a good thing, but I think quite often a fundamental mistake is that audit aren't out there explaining to their various stakeholders why it's a good thing. We know it's so good, we sort of take it for granted and sort of, well, of course you want internal audit. But over the years I've been engaged, quite often that first dialogue with stakeholders, and of course there are many types of stakeholder, you realise they don't really understand what internal audit's all about, or they have a misguided view of what internal audit's all about. They have the view from their last head of internal audit or the last business that they were at. And so for me, step number one in any organisation is get out there, engage with your senior stakeholders, explain the value audit can bring, explain what we can do for the enterprise, but at the same time, listen, understand what it is they want from internal audit as well. And that provides a good platform to then build that global consistency for our internal auditors, the people that are working in the enterprise to deliver internal audit, to ensure then that they really understand what the organisation is looking for.
And did you have in your global teams, did you have a single internal audit plan, or did each team have their own plan for their own business area? How did you structure the planning piece?
Absolutely, we brought it together in a single plan because one of our principal stakeholders is obviously the board of directors. But within that, another, and I know they sit on the board, but I wanted to be able to have a really good dialogue with the global CEO, the global CFO, the global COO about what audit was going to be doing in the next 12 months, the things that were going to matter to them, why they should be getting excited about some aspects of the audit plan. And I could only do that if I'd got a complete global picture. And so we would develop the plan locally. You have to, because you've got to start with what are the risks, what are the issues, what are the strategies, and they're all very much local, but build that into a coordinated picture. And of course, you can play back off that. So if my North America business said, actually, this is a key aspect of strategy for North America, this is what we think we might do to audit that and bring some value to the local business, you might quickly realize that there was a parallel with what our colleagues in Asia were doing, and maybe they hadn't thought about it as a key part of their plan. You can share that information, and through that iterative process, build up a total plan that is really relevant for the whole organization. And I should just say, Liz, I'm very conscious some of our listeners won't have a global audit team
and
won't have a massive audit function. I started out in a UK-based life business with 12 auditors. Many of these things are relevant even there because businesses are clearly partitioned often in terms of the distribution channels or the product related channels. So there's even there a danger that bits of the plan can get bifurcated and isolated. So the steps in terms of bringing it together, sharing it, understanding what's driving each component of the plan in a smaller business can be really valuable too.
Thank you for that. That's really helpful. One of the questions I was then going to go on and ask you was, coming out of our external quality assessments for 2016-17, one of the areas of weakness, so a common theme coming out from them, was around internal audit planning. And there's been lots of articles. Some organisations now, we have a county council who doesn't have a plan. Others go for 6 monthly plans, others go for annual plans. Based on your years, 1991, based on your years of experience, what's your thoughts about a plan and how a head of internal audit should put together their plan?
I'm firstly very pro a plan, so not to denigrate anyone who manages to deliver internal audit without one, but I think for so many reasons, having a plan is an important first step. So it's always been a big feature for me of delivering a really strong audit proposition for the organisations I've worked in. And it was one of the key steps, not the only one, but one of the key steps when I was asked to turn that first audit function around in delivering something that was conspicuously different from what had gone before. So I've always had a plan for quite a long while now. I'm not quite sure precisely when it came in, but for a long while. My plan has been a dynamic plan, and a lot of heads of audit I speak to have variants of a dynamic plan. So in the Experian context, and indeed before that in the Zurich Insurance context, we used to plan hard for the next 12 months. But we actually had a picture going out over the subsequent 2 years of the things that we think might make the audit plan. So, you know, one of the dialogues I would often have is, you know, are you auditing Japan this year? No, we're not getting to Japan this year, but we are going to be there in the year that follows. So having some sense of where you're going is obviously helpful. But dynamic in the sense that even within that 1 year plan, we would revisit that 3 or 4 times a year to reflect new risks that came on the scene, new business strategies, new directions, new regulation, obviously, that came up. So it was a very fluid and fungible element, but it gave us a structure to work within. We could then communicate when we were making changes to that plan because of a new strategy or a new regulation. Everybody, both within the business and our broader stakeholder set, knew what we were doing and what we were going to be delivering. In terms of building that plan, I'm sure, you know, I'm teaching grandmother to suck eggs, as it were, but we took a variety of inputs, and I guess every audit function does these days. So not surprisingly, we started with the risks where they were documented within the enterprise. We would take those as a logical first step towards working towards the plan. We talk to our many stakeholders in the organisation. We do that all the time anyway, generally a sort of monthly dialogue, what's happening, what's new, what's changing, what's gone wrong. But we'd use that dialogue very specifically at the planning phase to build up a picture of our own perspective on risk, you know, what was working within the enterprise and what wasn't working with the enterprise. Obviously, we used the body of information that is our previous audits. What have they told us in the past about how well the organisation is controlled? What have they told us about particular issues that emerge in parts of the organisation? And maybe we've done those audits in North America and the UK, but maybe we haven't done them in one element of Europe or the Far East. And so that obviously prompts a dialogue. We look externally, clearly, and I mean, that's where I think the Chartered Institute's so valuable, but I wouldn't pretend that we're the only source of information about what is happening outside your enterprise that you need to be thinking of, whether that's, you know, the whole debate around culture, which obviously is now quite well developed, or whether it's agile auditing, or whether it's a new aspect of regulation. There's a lot of information externally that will point you internally to things that perhaps you ought to be considering and thinking about for your own plan. And we obviously use business metrics, so just understanding generally how the business was operating, where the hotspots and challenges were. If you're a regulated business, clearly we would have reference to the regulation, and all my businesses in one form or another have been regulated. And we would distill that, for, as I say, firstly within each jurisdiction, or when I was just looking at a UK business, within each of the components of the business, into a first pass as to what we thought the plan ought to look like. And then we would aggregate that, and we would use, you know, a business process map, then just to do a reality check on, have we forgotten any parts of the business? I'm personally not one who believes you must get to every part of the business over a point in time. If it's low risk, I would argue there's no value in audit looking at it. But at least go through the logical step of, yeah, have we considered that? And have we consciously decided it doesn't need any audit activity, rather than just, you know, these are the things that are immediately front of mind, and then you look back and think, gosh, we forgot something quite fundamental. So that implies a relatively structured process, Liz. And I'm a big believer in getting key members of the audit team round the table with me to debate what we have, think about how we can improve that. And then, of course, a key final stage is to share that back with the business as a draft plan and say, look, this is what makes sense to us as an audit plan. It is our plan, it's not your plan. So we'll decide finally what goes in that plan. But nevertheless, you know, does this make sense to you? And obviously in that final stage, you may get nuances that say, well, actually that feels a little heavy in terms of your audit footprint there. Or actually, given the value of investment we're making in this part of the business, your audit plan feels a little light there, and perhaps you could give us a little more confidence that we're getting it right. Mm-hmm. So those final stages, you know, do allow a bit of fine tuning to something then that, you know, you feel confident to take off, share with the senior executives internally, as I mentioned earlier, and then of course go and share with the audit committee and the board of directors.
That is also an opportunity to get really strong engagement from across the business with regard to your plan for the year, and often I guess will help build, as you spoke about initially, that really strong relationship with senior management in the business, raise the profile of what internal audit is here to do. But do you have also, and it may be terminology, but do you also have a strategic internal audit plan that looks to 3 to 5 years out?
Well, as I said, the plan that we develop would cover broadly 3 years, and I probably, that wouldn't be my audit strategy, and perhaps that's just a, you know, nomenclature thing. We'll come back to that in a second. I think that that combination of a detailed 12-month plan and then a couple of years worth of higher level planning gives me a great platform to go and have the sort of discussion you've just mentioned, Liz. And I think I've always been an advocate of, I coined the phrase relationship management back in the 90s. That's really what is the basis of all good audit value at the end of the internal audit value, is having that strong relationship with the enterprise. You know, it doesn't mean you won't have arguments with the enterprise. You often do. And it doesn't mean you won't come up with a plan that the enterprise doesn't always like aspects of. But it does mean that that understanding will be there. And in most cases, they will like the plan and it'll be a relevant and strong plan for them, which means you've got that great endorsement when you actually go in to execute the plan. You know, you've got senior management saying, actually, yes, we're really looking forward to the outputs from this work. They're going to help us. So it gives you a huge momentum when you actually come to execute. You're not battling with the business. If you're not in agreement, it provides nonetheless the basis to have a meaningful discussion about why they may not see part of the plan as important or relevant. They may just not like it. They may see it as a threat. Why, nonetheless, it is important for an independent and objective audit function to go there and do that piece of work. So you can have differences, clearly, as an internal audit function, many will. But the important thing is that those differences will be properly understood before you've gone to do the work, rather than in some cases, as I saw earlier in my career, where, you know, you'd be trying to do the audit against a huge level of resistance and pushback. And quite often, if it becomes apparent there's some disagreement at maybe a regional level or an enterprise level within the business, the very fact that by the time you're sharing the plan with your senior stakeholders and they're saying, actually, that's an audit we're really interested in, it's a means of handling that difference later in the process.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd agree with you.
Okay. You talked about risk earlier when you were talking about your planning and the new standards that came in January 2017 recognised that internal audit might have a dual role in the internal audit and risk space. They absolutely need to put safeguards in place. Do you have a view about internal audit and risk being one and the same, or a view about the relationship between internal audit and risk?
That's a great question, because I do, and I think it's a view that's shifted a little over time. So when I started out with my first audit function, I actually set up the risk function to give me the information I needed to make audits successful. So it was a very rapid growth business. It hadn't really focused very strongly on risk management. You know, we're talking the 90s when a lot of businesses didn't have a risk function. Some of them didn't have an audit function either.
Indeed, they didn't.
And so I set up the risk function, and it gave us a structure as an organisation to have a meaningful dialogue about the risks that were there to the plan for the business. And of course, that same information was a key input to making audit much more relevant, much more focused. So I can clearly see there are strong advantages in having a clear synergy between risk and audit, and every audit plan will want to be risk-based. I think as I moved on in the financial services world and as the regulators got stronger and more active, it became very clear that audit needed to be able to audit the risk function and opine on the strength of the risk function. And I've seen that more recently, obviously, in my roles at Experian. And I think it's inherently difficult, but not impossible, but it's inherently difficult if you were the head of audit and the head of risk to conduct that audit essentially of yourself in a wholly independent and wholly objective way. There are lots of ways around that. I think, though, what I would draw a parallel with, you know, and something that's become much more prevalent in conversation is, you know, some refer to it as integrated assurance, some refer to it as coordinated assurance, but that dialogue between the risk function, the compliance function, the internal audit function, and most recently, I think, with the rise of cybercrime and the importance of IT, the IT security function. I think getting those four functions, there'll be others in some organisations that are equally relevant. Yeah, the dialogue between the second and the third line, bluntly, should then mean that you're all sharing intelligence that helps internal audit make their plan even stronger and better. But at the same time, and again, a key deliverer of value, I think, ensures that you're not duplicating activity and that you've got, again, either a consistency of viewpoint about your organisation or you understand why you differ. I mean, certainly talking to a lot of past chief executives, the dialogue that went something along the lines of, well, compliance see this as a big risk, but no, internal audit don't see that as a big risk. Or the risk register, the risk landscape for the enterprise has X right out there as sort of screaming red, you know, really high risk. An internal audit come along and say, oh, no, we don't really think that's very important. Yeah, that's not a helpful dialogue. So I think if you can get a consistency of viewpoint amongst the second and third line, if you're not consistent, at least you really understood why you're not consistent, so you can articulate that to your stakeholders. But then through that discussion, you've got a body of information that between you allows you to plan intelligently and may well have the compliance function saying, yes, you know, we see these three things as key risks for us this year. And that may well allow audit to say, fine, well, actually, we're not going to do a full audit in that area. We'll do a light touch piece of work that understands what came out of your work, might look at your methodology a little bit, understand that it's robust and reasonable, and will then allow us to recognise that that area has been adequately covered.
And what the Institute has done with our colleagues in Europe is our 2018 Risk in Focus report. And one of the risks, as we would expect, GDPR, cyber, culture, are all on there. No surprises there, I'm sure. But one of the risks that have been identified as a common theme is the pace of innovation. What are the challenges, do you believe, based on your experience in relation to internal audit delivering assurance around transformation projects, the pace of innovation in organisations?
Well, I think there are several things. I mean, firstly, yes, it is a key area that audit must consider. But, and this is horribly cliched, so I apologise up front, yeah, it's something we've all simply got to get used to. It's not new. I think having had an audit career that goes back to the 90s, I would argue that that pace of innovation has been there throughout. It's been increasing. But audit has to therefore think about that as a key component of its planning. I think it raises a few issues. The first, and this is obviously the theme that's developing in this conversation, Liz, is back to that dialogue with the business. Because I think, you know, getting an early indicator as to where the business sees that pace of change, pace of innovation happening, and the style in which that's going to change. You know, what is the business setting out to do? Obviously, is very relevant for us from a variety of aspects. You know, it's relevant in terms of understanding the risk around it, thinking about, therefore, how we might audit it. But I think often also thinking about, have we got the right resources to audit it? Have we got people who understand that sort of innovation? And frequently, that's where audit functions come unstuck, because the business has an expectation we're going to look at, you know, the innovation, the change that's going on, but we look at it in a superficial fashion because the people we've got in the team aren't quite up to the job. And that's not surprising. You know, sometimes, you know, in my old business at Experian, this was very advanced, leading-edge analytics development.
Yes, of course.
And whilst I got a great bunch of auditors, I wouldn't pretend that we had someone relevant for every one of those topics. So I'll come back to that if you remind me, but I think the staffing aspect is a key aspect to think of, particularly in this area. I think another aspect that certainly my businesses have asked me about, and again, it has some linkages with staffing as well, is that innovation in the context of the market. And so there's a real requirement, I think, for audit to look beyond the walls of their own enterprise and see what competitors are up to, see which way the market is developing, even if competitors aren't there yet. This whole subject of disruptive competition, what would that look like and how will your enterprise respond to that? Because
yes.
I think if audits in this area are going to be, again, high value and insightful, you need to draw in some of those themes and aspects when you're commenting on whether your business is appropriately dealing with that pace of change.
And I'll just interrupt you there for a moment,
yeah,
because You know, you talked at the beginning about relationships with stakeholders, and then you've just talked about what our competitors are doing in the marketplace. I think sometimes we miss an opportunity. I know when I was at Channel 5, all of the heads of audit in the broadcasting businesses who were competitors, but we would meet on a monthly basis to talk about challenges. So, you know, when they brought out the gambling legislation for everyone who ran competitions, we talked about the challenge that faced and how we might deal with that so that we were more of a united response to the legislator rather than individuals, which just sounds to be moaning. So use our competitors to learn from, but also to talk to.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, we certainly did that in the early days of regulation in the insurance sector here in the UK. I think it was very evident that the regulator had a better overview of the market than we did because we were all operating in our own little silos. So we got together and we shared those things that could be shared. I mean, clearly the difficulty in this area is a lot of this is proprietorial information.
Of course.
If the next big thing for my business is potentially going to be the disruptive competition for all the other businesses in my sector, clearly I can't talk about that. But I think where you can discuss, as you say, you know, the common challenges, then at least it informs your work internally when you're looking at how your own business is responding to those challenges.
Yes.
I agree, Liz. And I think, you know, for any internal auditor, you've got to be reading around your enterprise's market, understanding, you know, the way things are shaping up, the way things are developing. And certainly, whilst, you know, the head of audit is not going to be the sole defence in that area, I think being well connected, talking to other advisors, seeing what the Institute has in its information sources, will allow you to be better placed to think, actually, if this were to occur, this would be a major problem for my organisation. So when I have my next one-to-one with the business, let me discuss with the head of that area whether they've thought about that as being a problem. What are they doing to address that? And I think that, you know, assuming they have seen it and they are addressing it, that brings us back to your question, which is how should audit look at that change? And I've mentioned it a couple of times already, but I think, you know, this whole area of agile auditing is something that we should be embracing much more strongly. I mean, my old business, Experian, was moving very much into agile development methodologies to deal with this rate of change, plan it all out, execute in very structured stages, put it all together at the end, and you've got a new product, you've got a new system, is really not reflective of the way that that pace of change is happening now. So agile methodologies obviously allow you to course correct, to trial things quickly, to experiment as you develop. And I think audit have to take on board that when we develop our own methodologies to be able to work alongside that. So certainly in the Experian context, we actually had people sitting alongside the agile development team in the business, responding very quickly to changes in the market and the way that our products or our offerings ought to work. We had auditors embedded there, so actually we could then respond very quickly in terms of, okay, you're going in this direction. We think a short, sharp piece of auditing to give you comfort that, you know, your governance framework around that's strong, that your IT controls are going to be adequate, that you've thought through all the cyber risks in relation to this, which meant we could feedback quickly to the business in a matter of a week or so rather than a month or so, was totally aligned then with their thinking of responding to that pace of change.
So, and that must be really internal audit adding value.
Absolutely.
In real time almost, isn't it?
Very much, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, if I think of a particular circumstance, you know, we had a bunch of typical Californian techies moving very quickly to resolve some issues and to create some new product within the business. You know, their concept of old audit would have been a slow, staged, plodding, very methodical, all good things in one context, but totally alien to this issue of rate of change, rate of innovation. Whereas the way that we work with them was hugely welcomed. And actually, after the first couple of deliverables, they said, this is refreshing. You know, we've not worked with an audit function like this. You're keeping pace with us. You're helping think through the things that we need to be looking at. Every one of the papers you're giving us, whether it's green light, everything's looking good, you're okay, you're on the right lines, guys, or you've got some issues here you've really got to stop and deal with before you move on to the next phase, they found that very useful indeed. So I think you're right. The other thing that just springs to mind, Liz, is, again, for any audit function thinking about its plan, to remember that innovation these days doesn't just happen in an R&D function. You know, that's long ago.
Yeah.
Innovation is happening across the organisation all the time. And that raises a challenge for audit and making sure that you're aware of all the innovation going on. It raises an opportunity again for another value deliverable in terms of, is all that innovation actually aligned with the group strategy? So there's an opportunity to report back maybe to the senior leadership to say, well, do you realise, you know, you've actually got five teams across this enterprise all essentially trying to do the same thing, but in an unconnected way. And often it's internal audit that's the first flag to the organisation that this is going on. You know, the more organisations have got liberated and empower people to do more, the more scope there is actually for wasted effort in the organisation, unconnected effort, a lot of reinvention of the wheel.
So, or potentially you've got a team over here doing something that's got nothing to do with where your direction of travel of the organisation.
Absolutely.
You might be flagging that up as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think there's a lot within this area, and I think governance of change, you know, I've found a very rich vein in terms of audit plans, looking at how the organisation is itself setting up a framework to manage that change, to understand the risks and issues emerging, make sure that those risks and issues get sort of systematically dealt with. And so there's a lot in this area for internal audit to consider, I think. You're quite right.
There's a lot more questions that I would like to talk about. So what I would like to say to you is, please, will you come back and do another one of these?
I'd be delighted to, yes.
But finally, just to sort of conclude, just talk me through what you're hoping to achieve in your year as president.
Well, as may have come across, I think, Liz, one of the things I'm very conscious of is I don't think the value of internal audit is well enough understood. I think a lot is taken for granted when people are asked to lead audit functions or even to be a manager in an audit function, not necessarily to lead it. There's a presumption that the business will sort of know what internal audit is. And there's sometimes a presumption that what has been done before is the right answer, so let's carry on doing it. And so over this 12 months, but clearly it will extend long beyond my presidency, I think there's a real focus I'd like to put on making sure that all of the key stakeholders understand the full value proposition that audit brings. And that's, as we've covered in the talk today, that's a very rich proposition. You know, it's not just about audit work, it's about the knowledge that internal auditors have as individuals. They're often experts in their own field, in a function that perhaps uses guest auditors or secondees into audit. You know, you can have some very high-tech people, you know, real specialists in their knowledge. And so I think it's about the individual knowledge that audit can bring. It's about that pooled knowledge we talked about earlier in relation to the plan. It's about the advice and the guidance that audit can give the business. It's about those external contacts and the bits of information we can bring in from externally. It's many things, and I think it's actually clearly setting out that proposition to the senior stakeholders. Now, that's primarily a role for everyone listening to this podcast. You know, they are the people for whom the stakeholder relationship exists. But I think there is a role there for us here at the Chartered Institute. One of the things that we're looking to set up over the course of the next 12 months is a series of breakfasts or meetings with me, with our senior management team here at the Institute, meeting with audit committee chairs, directors, so that we too can convey what they ought to be expecting from a strong audit function. Now, obviously, that's a bit of a pull function. Then they can go back to their business and say, I'm not fully getting all these things. And hopefully that will encourage them to ask for more of these things. But I think a combination of our members engaging with their business and setting out the full ambit of what we can deliver, together with us explaining from the Institute perspective what a good audit function looks like, what it can do for an enterprise's success, I hope will lead to a position at the end of the next 12 months where value is better understood. The second component for me over the next 12 months is the importance of professional internal audit. You know, if internal audit itself is good and we want more of it, then a second part of our strategy, as you know, Liz, is that professional internal audit's even better. And that's not, I should probably say at this point, to, again, denigrate the skills, the knowledge, the activity of anyone listening into this call. But it perhaps is a sort of call to arms in that I see audit functions as I go around that perhaps aren't as well equipped in terms of their audit methodologies, the skills and the techniques that they're using, maybe again the skills and the training and the qualifications of the people in those functions. And to the extent that we as auditors are wholly accountable for the service we deliver, I think that's a great platform to go back to your business and say, well, you know what, you've got to invest a little more. So I think the important thing is that auditors shouldn't be afraid to go back to their enterprise and actually say we need more investment in internal audit. There is this presumption, and I saw it come through a little bit in that European paper that you referenced earlier, Liz, which I think is a great paper, incidentally, that audit functions need to make do with less resources. And I think it's beholden on us to actually go back to the business and say no on occasions. And, you know, we need some more dollars spent on training, yes, or we need certainly to ensure periodically that we've got a good quality external quality review that will allow us to strengthen what we do and share good practice and understand good practice and conceivably invest more in higher skilled auditors, because we can't be a strong value deliverer and do it on the cheap.
No, absolutely not.
Now, at the same time, I would say for balance that I do think audit functions need to demonstrate productivity gains as well. The rest of the organisation is having to. We're certainly not exempt from that. But I think we should challenge ourselves to do more for less, certainly. The sharing of knowledge, the sharing of information helps us achieve that. But ultimately, if audit needs a greater investment, then it must go back to the business and ask for that.
Thank you very much, Mike, and we look forward to your year as president and certainly to some more of these podcasts, because I think there's a lot that you can share with us and we can all learn from you. So huge thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Liz, very much enjoyed it.
Thank you for downloading Talking Heads from the Chartered Institute of Internal Auditors.